Allstate for Kia, the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. Well, a big night this evening with Channel 9's Jim Courier about to join us shortly. Chris Cleary from the New York Times joins us again. And Craig O'Shaughnessy, the strategy coach for Madison Keys, who takes on Ash Barty in about an hour's time. He's going to join us. But first, I'm sensing the Alf Brown medalist is about to drop a big one. Yes, a nuclear bomb about to go off in The Age tomorrow. It's a footy story, I'm told, but it involves this bloke.
I gotta testify, come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day I die, I'ma test
the mind boggles. Yep, that was Kanye West. Now, I'm no music buff. In fact, I'm horrible at music, but I know my footy, and he's not playing centre-half back for Carlton because Vossi's going to bring some sanity to the place and play Mitch McGovern there finally. So, Scoop, welcome to you. What the hell is going on before Jim Courier joins us?
Hello, Jared. There's so much in that. Firstly, I think that's the first time you've ever thrown to Kanye West.
It is. And I secondly, feel like Molly Meldrum.
And secondly, when I leave the studio now, I'm going to have to close my computer.
It's bad luck.
You've come around and decided to read.
Yes, indeed. Tell
well,
me this.
I can't,
is it, is
I can't
it, is
tell
it,
you.
Is it back page or is it front page?
Oh, I think it'll be on the front.
It's a front page. I thought it was nuclear. Just looking at it. Mm.
I think what we can say is that there is a soon-to-be-announced world tour.
Yeah.
Which may
With Kanye.
Which may intersect with the start of the footy season. And I'm just wondering who's going to win out here between arguably the biggest global act that the world has seen probably in the last 50 years as far as live shows or games at Marvel Stadium. But the AFL now owns Marvel Stadium. It's getting interesting. But what I will say is I reckon Melbourne is going to relaunch itself around March in more than just footy.
Okay. Hope he's vaxxed.
He was a strong anti-vaxxer.
He was an anti-vaxxer when he was
running
for president.
He was anti-abortion. He was very, very controversial. I think the latest from November is that he's had one jab.
Okay.
Which is one more than Novak.
So for those of you who aren't absolutely familiar with Kanye's best work, we might just have a little bit, because this is not the Carlton theme song.
Oh no, Matt's gone to sleep.
He has too. He was a Kanye fan too. I don't keep saying that after the Gold Coast. I might get myself into trouble here. But
the man we're talking about sold over 150 million records worldwide.
Did he? Here he goes.
You like this?
I like it when it's on the front page, Scoop, and you're dropping a bombshell. Speaking of bombshells, the Special K's got through in not a walk in the park. That's probably underselling it to a degree.
Did they win, Nick and Thanasi? I hadn't seen any celebrations.
And they desperately wanted to win too. It's become a bit more serious for them. They're having fun, but they were desperate, keen to win this one. And they I think they're the number three seed in the world. They put them to the sword pretty convincingly. I mean, you've got two guys with massive serves. They've got big wingspans. Jeez, let's hope it re...
What about the celebration at the end?
Well, that was off the top.
In fact, I went to go the chest pump.
I think it was a lot more serious out there from the players, and the crowd were a lot more serious and I think more respectful of the opposition when they were trying to serve. And I know a few people think the criticism of that has been over the top. I don't think... We're talking about four or five people. I think everybody else has been pretty supportive
Do you think the internationals watching us, Jared, think that Australian fans are behaving like galoots?
Not sure. Jim Courier joins us absolutely on time to field your question.
He's the man that interviews all these players.
Welcome to you, Jim. Thanks again for joining us this year.
It's great to be on the show. How's everyone doing?
We're going pretty well. Scoop's just broken a world exclusive. Kanye West is definitely coming to Australia in March, so if you stick around, I'm sure I'll be able to get you a ticket.
No, that'll be sold out and I will have no access. But I do appreciate that you guys would have the access and I might ride your shoulders, but I will not be here at that time. Exciting news, though.
It's big news.
He puts on a good show.
It's a sports reporter getting a front page. The chest goes out a fair bit, as you would probably know, Jim. Tell me, Jim, you've played a lot of Davis Cup. You're a great fan and a great supporter of the Davis Cup, captain for memory of the US Davis Cup team and a great player in that you would have gone around the world and seen extraordinary scenes in Spain, in Brazil, in all manner of places, as we have. And the Kyrgios and Kokkinakis scenes, I think, with the exception of half a dozen or a dozen, have been very much like that. Scoop asked the question of me, but you're in a better position to answer it. How do people around the world view the antics that we've seen on the outside courts?
Well, I think it depends on who you ask. I think if you ask maybe some tennis sort of traditionalists, they may not like it, but they probably haven't been to that many Davis Cup matches in South America or you know, in some places where the crowds can get really aggressive and really into it. And from my eyes, I'm much more of a progressive tennis fan. I want us to be inclusive. I want us to have a little something for everybody. And Nick and Thanasi open up a door for a new tennis fan. And if you can't see it, you don't have your TV on or you're not in the stadium, because it's loud, it is raucous, it seems like it's a heck of a lot of fun for the people in the stands, and the TV ratings aren't half bad either. They're really good, in fact.
Jim, on that, has the chance of a singles run deep into the second week, has it passed Nick Kyrgios at soon to be 27?
I don't think so. No, his talent's intact. He played well in this tournament against who did he play? Against Medvedev, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that was a barn burner of a match. No, his current ranking against the top four players that are currently ranked top four is 10-5. He has 10 wins against 5 losses. No, it's there for him if he's healthy, if he's fit, if he's ready. And maybe this doubles will jumpstart him. Maybe not. But I'll tell you what, tennis is more fun when he's around. It's more interesting, and it gets a lot more attention. And that's ultimately a good thing for the rest of the sport.
What we've seen, though, is a couple of other players emerge around his age. And last night, Felix Double A.
Auger Aliassim.
I love the way you say that, Scoop. That's why you're captain of the twos on Channel 9.
That's mean.
I don't think I've seen a better two sets played by anybody this year. He looks a phenomenal talent, unbelievably lost.
What is he, Drew, 21?
He's 21 years of age, and you look around at those around him. I mean, Medvedev's 25, Tsitsipas 23, Sinner's 20, Alcaraz is 18. There's his group coming through, but that guy's form last night was breathtaking.
Yeah, he's a tremendous athlete. He's worked awfully hard to improve some areas in his game. And it seems like the game is now intact. There were a couple of moments where he blinked and didn't quite deliver shots under pressure. And that's just the next level for him, is to be able to play that level he showed us in the first two sets for one more set. And he had Medvedev on the ropes, and he got unlucky. The roof closing and the temperature going down with air conditioning, I think that was real problematic for him and really good for Medvedev, unfortunately, for Felix.
Do we need to sort out the roof policy? Because I just can't see why we have to have such a disruption in play.
Yeah, it's tricky because they want the tournament to be played outdoors if at all possible, and we all know how unpredictable Melbourne weather is. But I also think we all do get frustrated when you see the radar and you know there's rain in the area and the roof isn't closed, and you wonder, why are we doing this to ourselves? And you know, ultimately the play only got stopped for about 7 minutes in that match, but the conditions changed a lot. And, you know, maybe Felix wouldn't have got off to such a good start if they had started indoors. It's hard to say, but look, I think it's a tricky job to get right, because you do want to play it outside if possible, but you don't want to miss a lot of time, because it's boring for the fans and it's bad for TV.
So just on FAA, we've got Rafa, Novak, Roger and Andy Murray, the big four over the last decade or two. Rafa, Novak and Roger still around. Rafa potentially could win this particular one, but cast your eye forward 3 years and give me the top three players in 3 years' time. And I've basically given you the menu: Tsitsipas, Medvedev, FAA, Jannik Sinner, Berrettini, Alcaraz, Zverev, Ruud, and Kyrgios. I mean, they're, with the exception of Kyrgios, who's nearly 27, they're all 25 and under. Alcaraz only 18. There's this unbelievable wave of men coming through.
No, there are, and I'll also give you one more. It's the son of the Australian Open champion from the late 90s, Peter Korda. His name is Sebastian Korda. He's about 6'5", and he's already ranked in the top 50. He's born and raised in America, so he plays under an American flag. He's really good and really smooth, too. But you look in there, and I say Alcaraz is for sure going to be a big part of our story going forward. So, too, Medvedev. I think Kyrgios is going to have to really work hard to get in that discussion, because you're going to have players like Tsitsipas and Zverev, who play well on all surfaces. But they're finally going to have some elbow room. These players have been, apart from the really young ones, they've been dealing with these all-time greats who have been suppressing them, and they're going to finally see some daylight now, with Federer unlikely to come back and play too much at this level. Nadal hopefully is going to be healthy enough to go, and Novak, no one knows what his status is going to be going forward. So it's a little opportunity knocks now.
Speaking of Jim Courier, live from Melbourne Park, Dylan Alcott has lost the first set in his match against Sam Schroeder, the Dutchman, 7-5 early in the second. Jared, not sure if you heard Jim throughout the week in the call on Channel 9 compared Ash Barty and Roger Federer, and said, you know, she might even have a better slice backhand than the great Fed. Ash was asked about that in her press conference.
It's very kind from Jim. I think everyone's shots are unique. I think obviously Roger has one of the most exceptional slice backhands in the game. Mine's a long way off that. Absolutely no stretch of the imagination. We're even on the same page at all. But I love to use my slice. I love to get creative with it, to use it offensively and defensively. And over my career, I've learnt that it is a weapon for me. I try and use it when I have to. Sometimes I try and use it when it's my choice and I can be really, really aggressive with it. But being able to use it with variety and have different options has been a massive part of my game.
Well, she might be on the same page now, Jim.
Well, look, her slice is incredible, and relative to the rest of the women's field, her slice, there's an even bigger separation between what she can do and her peer group and what Roger can do in his peer group. I think they're both brilliant. I wouldn't want to face either of them, let's put it that way. And like, one thing to look for tonight when she goes into combat at 7:30 in about an hour and 15 minutes from now against the American Madison Keys is how much does Madison Keys hit the ball into the slice? Because that's like suicide for a player. I wouldn't be surprised if Madison Keys tries to hit more shots to Ash's forehand, which is a bigger weapon but is also a higher bouncing ball, which makes it easier to attack if you're the tall American.
So Madison Keys has spent a long time as one of the favourites to be the next Grand Slam winner. She hasn't done it, but it just according to things I've read in the paper, she seems to have simplified her game a little bit. Do you give her a big chance or just a chance?
I would say that she's a chance. I think she's in a good headspace because she's kind of given up a little bit of some of the tension that was holding her down. She was just trying too hard effectively, and now she's just playing a little bit like Ash does, a little bit more point for point mentality, and that's working out for her. The issue for Madison Keys is that when she's played in some big matches before, and she's been in this is her fourth major semifinal, and she's been a finalist at the U.S. Open, she can get a little nervous and she can overhit and make a lot of errors. And that's the way that Ash has been beating these big hitting players in the recent rounds, is by giving them low shots with a slice and watching them miss. So we'll see. If Madison Keys is in control of her game, she can pose a big threat. She has the firepower. If she's at all off of her game, this will be a win for Ash.
Jim, we've got Chris Cleary from the New York Times coming up later in the show. Now, his favourite thing about coming to Melbourne is he gets to go to Donovan's at the end of the 2 weeks in St Kilda. Have you got a favourite thing to do here? Is it a restaurant? Is it a golf course? What do you love about coming here?
Well, I always go to my favorite coffee shop in the morning here, Fair Trader, which I love the people who work there, the baristas and all the staff. They're so warm, and it feels like home for me. And this year I haven't been able to get over to I have a favorite French steakhouse over in South Yarra called Francois, and I have not been able to get over there this year. Just we're a little bit cooped up because of COVID, so I'm missing that. But I love to be out walking around and just being a part of the environment here. And walking from the CBD where I stay to Melbourne Park every day is just a joy. So I haven't gotten to everything, but I love it. And by the way, Chris Clary is the best tennis writer in the world, and that one is not even close. He's the Ash Barty of tennis writers.
He's a great cafe, Jared, Fair Trader, just on Exhibition Street there if anyone's looking.
Yeah.
Jim, great to have you on. We love it every year, and good luck for the rest of the coverage.
Great talking to you guys. Have a great rest of the show.
Jim Courier there, Channel 9 commentator extraordinaire. Great to have him on, Jared.
Did he make an appearance on Jim?
More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Kansas' most trusted energy retailer. And for Kia, you can check out the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. Just got a text from Jim Courier, by the way, Jared. Big supporter of Jim.
Big supporter?
Big supporter.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate the fact that you're able to get him on, given that you're the captain there.
Earlier tonight, we spoke with a man that I'm not sure if a lot of our listeners would know by name, Jared, but Craig O'Shaughnessy, who's a tennis coach and analyst, headhunted by Madison Keys to help her take out Ash Barty tonight. He's been used by Novak Djokovic. We spoke to him a little bit earlier, and we talked to him about, you know, one of the ways to beat Ash is potentially exposing her forehand.
Ash being a right-hander, so when she's standing in the deuce court, her, you know, where every righty's going to be, her forehand is okay.
Yep.
You can pressure it out wide, whether it's direction, whether it's depth, whether it's speed. You know, Rafa loves to hit his forehand and wrap that ball, wrap the racket around his head, kind of
the
like
lasso.
The lasso, follow through. Yeah, the lasso forehand. But Ash Barty, when she does it, it's not for the right reason. It's because she's hitting it late, because she's rushed. And the really easy way to understand the relationship between forehands and backhands is this. The forehand's the sword, the backhand's the shield. About 70% of all winners from the back of the court come from the forehand side.
Mm.
But when you pressure a backhand, when you pressure the shield, you know, it's innate in the shield to block, to defend, to not make an error. But what you want to do in tennis is attack the forehand, because the sword essentially says, you know what, I'm better than a shield. I don't need to defend. I want to attack. And as soon as you can make the sword uncomfortable, you know, many errors flow from that side. And I tell you, you know, in the last few years, if I've done 100 game plans, whether it's for Novak or Berrettini or players at every level, I would say 95 out of 100 are attack the opponent's forehand out wide in the juice court, rush it, and the errors will come from that side.
And I guess the added bonus of attacking the forehand is that, as you rightly point out, you minimise the capacity for Ash Barty to kill you with her slice. Most people use the slice as the shield. She can use it as potentially a sword in its own right.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The Ash Barty backhand slice is the best shot in the women's game. But this is what's so intriguing about the slice. She uses it to just put the ball back in play. If she hits 100 backhand slices, you know, we can imagine her making 98. But when it arrives on the other side of the court, it's low and it's slow and it's skidding, and there's almost nothing you can do with it. So, you know, she's not going to miss it, and the opponents aren't going to do anything about it. When we look at winners, what's crazy is that she's only hit 4 backhand winners for the tournament so far. Madison Keys has got 38.
Oh,
So you look at it and say, well, you know, yeah, Madison really likes to go after a backhand. But then you also go and look at the errors. Ash has only made 54 backhand errors, and Madison's made 115. So Ash wants to minimize the errors on that side. She wants to extract the forehand errors on the other side. And she doesn't care if she hits a backhand winner for the entire tournament. It's that side of the court is all about just keeping the opponent back and pinning them back and giving them absolutely nothing to work with.
Going back to Madison, I mean, in your discussions with her, did it sort of dawn on her when you were simplifying it that why wasn't I giving this information earlier in my career, and how has she accepted that information?
Yeah, great point. So one of the things that came up early in the discussion, I did a 10-match analysis for Madison. I got 10 of her matches, put it all into one aggregated data set, and that was the big key. When you look at it one-on-one,
yep,
you get good data, but 10 matches gives you a whole different viewpoint. And one of the things Madison said to me that I found so interesting is that throughout her career, she'd been shown highlight reels of her spectacular play, you know, the big winners, the big early forehand winners. And, you know, we made a decision that we're going to show her points that she wins, but there is no winner on her side of the court. So it's about developing the point a bit more. It's about making the opponent uncomfortable. It's about forcing an error. And I think that's really resonated with her. And, you know, she's building back. She had some injuries. She lost confidence, like, you know, every player is going to do throughout their career. But, you know, she goes to Adelaide and wins there and, you know, is in the semis here. So she's in great form. She has great confidence. She's seen the court very clearly. She's making good decisions. And, it, you know, all of that comes together for an amazing semi-final here in Melbourne Park.
The great Craig O'Shaughnessy there. The full interview is on our podcast, Jared. Dylan Alcott in a spot of bother on centre court in his wheelchair final. Lost the first set to Sam Schroeder, who's the numbers two seed, Dylan being one, 7-5, and he's 3-love and 15-40 down serving in the second. So the Australian of the Year is going to have to pull out one of the great Daniel Medvedev-style comebacks if he's going to get out of that one.
Yeah, he's in a bit of trouble at the present time. But time for us to take a break. Here's news headlines with Tony Tardio. Tony?
Good evening. Two elderly residents have been taken to hospital for observation with smoke inhalation after a lightning strike set a house on fire at Bundoora today. Fire Rescue Victoria were called to the Batula Avenue property this morning as storms swept through Melbourne. From this weekend, those aged 5 to 11 will be able to walk in and get their first dose of a paediatric vaccine at select state-run vaccination hubs without needing an appointment. 15 people have died of COVID in Victoria in the past 24 hours, and there have been 13,755 new cases. An AFLW player has withdrawn from tomorrow night's GWS Western Bulldogs game after deciding not to wear the Rainbow Pride jumper. Australia's poised to help fill energy shortages overseas as tensions between Russia and Ukraine threaten supply. And the City of Melbourne is accepting expressions of interest from more than 700 buskers in a bid to attract more people back to the CBD. Called On the Road Again, the performances will showcase and support local talent from February 17 to March 14. More news at 7.
Time now for a sports update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, keeping you safe on the roads. Tyrepower.com.au.
I was not playing my best and Felix was playing unbelievable, serving unbelievable. He was, you know, he was all over me, to be honest, all over the place. I didn't really know what to do, so I was like, actually, yeah, I don't know if people are going to like it, but I told myself what Novak would do. And you know, what came to my mind was that because he's one of the greatest champions, or Rafa or Roger, to be honest, they won so many matches like this. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to make him work. If he wants to win it, he needs to, you know, fight till the last point.
See, smart there from Daniil Medvedev. He mentioned Novak, not a great reaction. How do I get out of this? Well, I mean, it's also what Roger or Rafa would...
I mean, I thought it was misrepresented. It was suggested that the crowd were booing him. I didn't think they were just booing the sound of Novak.
Totally.
So
they weren't booing him.
I don't think they were booing him at all.
I think they were disagreeing with him bringing up Novak, probably.
He's not being set up as the villain. I think he's... It was one of the great comebacks that game. So he... The only question about him and winning now is, has he got enough juice in the tank?
Did you think... Oh, you went to bed, didn't you?
I did.
The end of the fourth, when he had match point, FAA, I thought it was over. I really did. I was like, no, he's gone now.
He's a gutsy bugger, isn't he?
Medvedev's gone.
That was a hell of a turnaround.
Does he beat Tsitsipas?
How would you know? I mean, talking about gutsy, Tsitsipas is...
His performance in the quarter was just like... Whew.
Yeah. I mean, it's worthy of a final, and that's the depth of men's tennis is rejuvenated really quickly. It looked as if when Federer passed and Andy Murray passed, that there was a bit of a gap there. And right now, with Berrettini coming through and Sinner coming through and the like, it's been filled pretty quickly and with exciting talent, really exciting.
I just think the Fed's got one more run in him.
I reckon he's gone, the Fed.
Never to play a slam again?
No, I think he'll probably play, but I can't. It's hard to see him winning one. It's like Serena. I mean, she could come back and play, make
just
second
think he's
work.
He's got one more run in him.
One more?
Well, I'm not sure he's...
Well, I think he does too, and that's why he's probably going to have a crack.
All I'm saying is if he, you know, if we get to Wimbledon and he's in the quarters...
Yep, you're not
backing
against him.
You wouldn't want to play him, would you? Dylan Alcott serving at 40-30 and love 5 in the second. So it looks like he's going to go down in the final to Sam Schroeder, who is the world number two.
Don't write him off yet, but it'll be a big comeback
If the Australian of the Year pulled off a comeback from here, we would be talking about it for decades. It would be a bigger comeback than Medvedev, I think.
Okay.
More sports day coming up.
We've got Christopher Cleary from the New York Times. Jared, have you set him up with a contact at Donovan's yet?
I've got the number. He's just got to ring. But I'm going to ask him the question that Jim Courier wouldn't answer. Who is going to be the top three players in 3 years' time? Give me the order.
Christopher Cleary next. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and for Kia. Very privileged to have once again Christopher Cleary, the leading tennis journalist of the New York Times. It's been great to have both him and Ben Rothenberg as part of the show, Jared. There aren't any two better on the planet than Chris and Ben. But Christopher Cleary is with us again, Jared.
Welcome to you, Chris. I've got to say you were given an introduction by Jim Courier as the number one journalist in the sport, and you've been there for a number of decades. So we do feel privileged to have you on board again. How have you rated the last couple of days? There's been some incredible tennis.
You know, tennis-wise, it's been great. For sleep, it's not been great. But you know what? Who cares?
It's
been fantastic, eh?
It has been. I mean, I must admit I failed the endurance test last night. I thought FAA was going to win and win quite comfortably. I missed the comeback, but my God, what a game of tennis that was.
Yeah, you know, that's Medvedev's just got this reservoir of confidence and this slap-happy game where he can take big risks, and they're paying off for him at this stage. And, you know, Felix, the young Canadian, just hasn't quite done it yet. He's been very close to making that breakthrough victory. And I'm not saying that he blinked last night. I think more it was a case of Medvedev coming through when he needed it. But that match really turned, and you could feel once he got through that that match point, he was kind of clearer sailing for him. And what an emotional evening. And then I think at the end with him saying he was inspired by Djokovic and the crowd booing and all that, it was just, you know, summed up 2022 at the Australian Open.
Yeah, indeed it did. And look, he may have the final say. Jim Courier deferred to your experience and your intellect in the game. I asked him who he thought was going to be the top three players in order in 3 years' time, given that we're coming to the end of the Rafa Novak and Roger Rein. We'll exclude them. You've got Tsitsipas at 23, Medvedev 25, FAA at 21, Sinner 20, Berrettini at 25, Alcaraz 18, Zverev, Ruud, and Kyrgios. Can you pick your three and put them in order for us?
Jim Courier's a pretty smart guy. Yeah. If he deferred, there probably was a good reason for it. But I would say, honestly, you know, it's a crapshoot because of the injuries in the game and because of you don't know who's going to be able to handle fame and fortune and all those sorts of things, but it's in terms of the game and what they can bring and what the just sort of the raw ability that you're seeing and what they're, you know, and just what I've seen so far. I'm going to put Tsitsipas up there. I'm going to put Medvedev up there, and I'm going to put Alcaraz up there.
Yeah, we haven't seen enough of Alcaraz to, at least I haven't, to make a judgment.
I think he became the youngest ever person to reach a men's US quarter.
He must be a hell of a player if you've got him ahead of Felix, because the tennis I saw Felix play last night, I think it's the best tennis I've seen at the Open this year.
Yeah, Felix is a fantastic player, and he's coming on strong, and I think he's really improved a lot. You can see from last season to this, you know, sort of some areas of his game, the pressure serving, sort of the transition game to the net. Yeah, he's a very he's a beautiful player, flows around the court. I thought he's a bit mechanical at times, and he hasn't handled the biggest pressure matches that well yet. Mm-hmm. I think he's 0-4 in his finals. Okay. But you're right. I mean, he's got all the tools. Alcaraz just has this sort of electricity to him. He's a bit smaller. He may have trouble holding up physically. But he's got dynamite in his racket. He can play all court tennis. He's flashy. He's going to get people excited around the world, I think. And it's a bit of a reach on my part, but I've just, from what I've seen, he has that the intangibles, I think, to be a champion.
Chris, Jared and I have both gone public that we're on the gondola. We're on the Berrettini bandwagon. We think he can beat Rafa. Do you? I mean, how's his big hitting game going to come up against the top spin of one of the greats?
Well, you know, you could say Rafa looked pretty beat after that match against Shapovalov, and he was. I mean, I think it took a lot out of him. He's coming back from long break and COVID and all the rest. You know, but Berrettini hasn't exactly had a stroll through the gardens of Melbourne either. He's been 2 5-setters, late night matches, taking a lot out of him as well. I think that's really a 50-50 match for me. But I agree. I think anybody left can win. Medvedev playing his very best, I think, would be a solid favorite. He hasn't played his very best. It's been intermittent. I think you got to give Tsitsipas a shot the way he played against Sinner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Berrettini is a guy who's come on. But he has that backhand side weakness, which is exploitable. And, you know, the best players in the game now, they don't really have a place where you can go that's a safe space. And against Berrettini, there is that safe space. And you got to figure maybe the very best players in the world are going to find that safe space. Mm.
Shapovalov had plenty to say during the match and after the match.
Yeah.
Did he have a point?
You know, that's a great question. I've been thinking about it a lot. Basically, you know, I think, you know, Shapo went too far. I think the corruption comment to Bernardes to kind of lump everybody in that category, especially that early in the match, it was like he was stewing before he got on the court and he was ready to pop. But I do think that, you know, he had a point in terms of how the match was being managed, because when he said that and then he got upset the first time at the end of the first set, I mean, time had been called, 40 seconds had ticked by, Nadal was still in his chair. You know, Rafa's got a point. Sweaty match, tough conditions, maybe they should give him a little bit extra time after the set, but that's not what was called. So Dennis is out there ready to serve, and the rule is you play to the reasonable pace of the server. And in that situation, I don't think it was reasonable pace being respected. But to go as far as he did, say there's rampant favoritism and all the rest, considering all the stuff that's happened over the years with Nadal and all the good he's brought to the game. And and he's, you know, he's not breaking rules in a, he's more or less pushing the edge of the rules in terms of the time. And a lot of things have been tightened up. So, you know, I think Dennis, there's definitely some basis for his complaints, but I think he went too far.
Chris Clary joining us, the number one tennis journalist on the planet. He's here in Melbourne again. And Jared, didn't Chris tell us last week that he has a bit of a
standing routine post the Tennis Australian Open?
Is it Donovan's?
He heads down to Donovan's. Right. And Chris, last time we spoke, we didn't quite get into the nuts of it, but we did promise you we'd try and help you out. Have you got a special table, a favourite table down there at Donovan's?
You know, I got to tell you, I'm just hoping I'm going to be able to walk and breathe by the way this matches are setting up late night here. But yeah, Monday night, if you can get me a table, you know, with a view, I'd love it.
Okay.
Bring it on.
There's a corner spot there. How many are you talking about here?
Well, my usual party is 24, 25 people, but I'm going to just go for two this time, I think, probably.
Okay, for two. Well, we've got a bloke who may be able to help you. He's the number one manager down there. Nick from Donovan's joins us on the line.
You got the boss.
I've got the boss. Welcome to you, Nick.
G'day, Jared, and g'day, Chris. How are you? How are you, fellas?
This is great. I'm loving this.
We're going particularly well. Now, we've got this young bloke who comes out to Australia a bit, and part of his routine is he celebrates the end of the Australian Open on Monday, which is probably going to have to be Tuesday because the final's on Monday night, and you're not open on Monday. But nevertheless, can you sort him out with your number one table there in the corner with a view over the bay?
Jared, Chris, looking forward to having you join us. Watch the sunset in hand down at Donovan's in St Kilda, and we'll have a beer to the Australian Open Bomb Alaska for you as well, en route. Having you join us.
You got the special Tennis Australia Bomb Alaska, Chris, on us.
All right, guys. I can't ask for more than that. I'm just hoping I'm going to be able to walk by then, and I'll make it there. I'll get the taxi and do it.
Great stuff. Appreciate your time. Enjoyed following you over the years.
Thanks, Chris.
And thanks very much for coming on a couple of times. And good luck to you, Nick. Look after the young bloke.
Will do. Thanks, heaps, guys.
That's great.
Go the chicken pie as well. I think that's the house special as well, Chris. You can't go wrong.
I'm not sure he's going to recognize me, guys, if you call me young, though, but I'll do my best to do an impression.
I think the accent might give you away.
Good on you, Chris. Looking forward to reading all your stuff in the New York Times.
Right,
they're great.
Thanks very much.
Chris Clary joining us right here on Sports Day. I got to
testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day I die. And for those of you just joining us and wondering why we are playing Kanye West, we haven't turned into a music station, but the big story coming out in tomorrow's Age has some connection with Kanye and football. And we've already cleared up the fact that he is not being recruited to Carlton to play centre-half back. Scoop McClure, the Elf Brown medalist, is making a big start tomorrow with a front pager. This is good stuff from you, Scoop. Can you put any more flesh on the bone?
Well, you know I can't. What are you putting me in this position for?
All I can say is that there is a global superstar who I can't name.
Yes.
That is about to launch a world tour.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that world tour will see him come to Melbourne.
Right.
And he wants to play at Marvel Stadium.
Yes.
Early in the football season.
So it's not interrupting the Wizard Cup. What's it called this year?
Is it the NAB Challenge?
Whatever it's called.
What's it called?
It's not Wizard. I'm not even sure Wizard is still with us.
Turned into such a Mickey Mouse thing. Nothing against the sponsors, whoever that is, by the way.
How's the grass down there? They're resurfacing it, aren't they?
I think they're redoing it.
Mm.
But news of the arrival of said superstar has, I think, infiltrated the ground staff down there.
Is it?
I believe so.
Ground staff watches.
Jared, can we get off this just before we go?
Who's he barrack for, Kanye?
I don't know. Well, he's a superstar, so he probably barracks for Richmond.
Okay, all right.
Pete Ryan's just written a really fascinating story in The Age that an AFLW player for GWS won't play against the Western Bulldogs tomorrow night because she is refusing to wear the club's pride jumper for religious reasons.
Right.
That's a statement.
Well, this is what happens. I mean, we're
Hanin Zryker, who's 22, has been grappling with whether to wear the jumper which AFLW players will wear to recognise the support of the LGBTQI+ community all week before reaching the decision. So she's not going to play because she's refusing to wear the pride jumper. That's a first.
Well, it is a first, and she's got strong religious beliefs, obviously, and she's expressing those, and like everybody else, she should be included and not cast aside because of her beliefs.
But her beliefs are ultimately divisive. And her beliefs are ultimately separating people and putting, yeah.
Are her beliefs, Scoop. They're religious beliefs. She can't help it. That's her beliefs.
Yeah, but there are also a lot of religious beliefs in the last 50 years that have caused some fair bit of pain in the world.
Yep, understand.
It's going to be interesting to see how the club handles it. You know, supporting the player with individual beliefs that ultimately might pin her against other teammates.
Well, we'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. Give us your prediction tonight, Scoop. Madison Keys.
Ash in straight, which means you'll probably win in three.
Ash in straight. I think it might be three sets this one.
Hey, Jared, can you buy a copy of The Age for me tomorrow?
Indeed, I will. I'll bring one in for you. I usually go online, but I'll buy one.
See you, folks. Welcome back to Sports Day. Craig O'Shaughnessy is the strategy coach and analyst, a man that was a former strategy coach, Jared, of the great Novak Djokovic. In fact, sat in the courtside box for four of his 20 Grand Slam crowns, headhunted to help Madison Keys in the lead-up to playing Ash Barty, which is, of course, later tonight.
Yep.
And he's been good enough to give us some of his time, Jared.
Well, I'm pleased to talk to Craig because I read the column in The Australian penned by Will Swanson, who is a top-of-the-tree sports journalist.
You like Will, don't you?
I do like Will.
You like a lot of his stuff.
I like a lot of his stuff. I don't always agree with him, but I like where he comes from. But he wrote a column about Craig O'Shaughnessy, and Craig has broken down Ash's game.
Mm-hmm.
But what really got up my goat, what really pissed me off, in fact, really grinded the gears was I read the comments pieces. And the comments, the one that really killed me was...
Jared, why do you read the comments?
Well, I'm always interested in people's views.
See, I'm not.
So one of the people gave the predictable response, oh, how many Grand Slams has he played?
Mm.
And I thought to myself, some of the smartest people in football I've ever met are analysts who never kick the ball in anger inside the white lines at the top level.
And that would be across all sports, Jared, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
All
and
over the
know
world.
More about football than half the blokes I've worked with. In fact, some of them more than most of the blokes I've worked with.
Yeah.
And I suspect we're going to talk to a bloke exactly like that. Craig, sorry about the elongated build-up, but... I hope I've penciled you as one of those sorts of guys that played at a pretty good level himself, but has an eye for the sport. Welcome.
Well, Jared, thank you. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with going and reading the column and seeing all the comments down there. You know, I grew up in Albury and played on the grass, you know, pretty every day as a kid. And
yep.
Greatly enjoyed my time before I went to the States and played college tennis. So, just put me anywhere in the sport. Put me on the court with a young kid that's passionate or with a top 10 player in the world that's passionate, and I'm enjoying my craft.
And you know the craft and you break it down differently. I've always found there are there's a unique breed in sport, guys who just see the game in a different way, but they can break it down and isolate the strengths and the weaknesses. I could name you a couple. Glenn Luff was the first analyst I really got to know, and he could break a game down and show me where clubs are really strong and where they're weak, etc. And it gave me a totally different mindset towards analysts who often use data, but some just use their eye. Greg Hutchison, former coach of Melbourne as a temporary coach, he was one of those guys who could see it from the box. And Craig, what you see in breaking down Ash Barty's game is that the one way you can get a look at beating her is to expose her forehand.
Yeah, so Ash being a right-hander, so when she's standing in the deuce court, her, you know, where every right is going to be, her forehand is okay.
Yep.
You can pressure it out wide, whether it's direction, whether it's depth, whether it's speed. You know, Rafa loves to hit his forehand and wrap that ball, excuse me, wrap the racket around his head, kind of
the like lesser.
Follow through. Yeah, the last two points. But Ash Barty, when she does it, it's not for the right reason. It's because she's hitting it late, because she's rushed. And the really easy way to understand the relationship between forehands and backhands is this. The forehand's the sword, the backhand's the shield. About 70% of all winners from the back of the court come from the forehand side.
Mm.
But when you pressure a backhand, when you pressure the shield, you know, it's innate in the shield to block, to defend, to not make an error. But what you want to do in tennis is attack the forehand, because the sword essentially says, you know what, I'm better than a shield. I don't need to defend. I want to attack. And as soon as you can make the sword uncomfortable, you know, many errors flow from that side. And I tell you, you know, in the last few years, if I've done 100 game plans, whether it's for Novak or Berrettini or players at every level, I would say 95 out of 100 are attack the opponent's forehand out wide in the juice court, rush it, and the errors will come from that side.
And I guess the added bonus of attacking the forehand is that, as you rightly point out, you minimise the capacity for Ash Barty to kill you with her slice. Most people use the slice as the shield. She can use it as potentially a sword in its own right.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The Ash Barty backhand slice is the best shot in the women's game. But this is what's so intriguing about the slice. She uses it to just put the ball back in play. If she hits 100 backhand slices, you know, we can imagine her making 98. But when it arrives on the other side of the court, it's low and it's slow and it's skidding, and there's almost nothing you can do with it. So, you know, she's not going to miss it, and the opponents aren't going to do anything about it. When we look at winners, what's crazy is that she's only hit 4 backhand winners for the tournament so far. Madison Keys has got 38.
Oh,
So you look at it and say, well, you know, yeah, Madison really likes to go after a backhand, but then you also go and look at the errors. Ash has only made 54 backhand errors, and Madison's made 115. So Ash wants to minimize the errors on that side. She wants to extract the forehand errors on the other side, and she doesn't care if she hits a backhand winner for the entire tournament. It's that side of the court is all about just keeping the opponent back and pinning them back and giving them absolutely nothing to work with.
So, Craig, how many players would there be out there on tour that have all the weapons to go deep into the second week of a slam, but their tactics aren't right?
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good question. I'd say at the start of this tournament, both on the men's and women's side, you could say there's probably a handful, maybe 5. There's 5 players, men and women, that have a legitimate shot of winning the title. But let's dip into the secondary layer, where there's probably at least another 20 if they got the strategy right and the tactics right, whether you're serving, returning, rallying, approaching. They are the ones in waiting that if they just get their head right and the strategy right, they could also be a contender here at the Australian Open.
Mm. Madison Keys has gone through a lot of pain to get to where she is. She's never won a slam. People probably 8 years ago thought she'd be a multiple slam winner. And my readings on her is that she wants to hit a winner off every shot. I'm not sure it was you that made that comment or it was somebody else, but I'll credit you, Craig, but she's learned. She's learned to get patient and try and put in a couple of ones and twos before she goes for the 4 and the 6.
Yep. Yeah, very true.
Let's just flash back to the 2000 Australian Open final. Andre Agassi beats Evgeny Kafelnikov in four sets.
Yep.
Andre goes to the post-match interview with Bruce McAvaney, and they're talking about the match, and a point comes up with Andre running side to side and Evgeny running side to side, and Andre makes a comment and says, Evgeny is only looking to pull the trigger one time in the point. And that really resonated me. And for the next 20 years, I've said that, and I've said that directly to Madison, is that she's looking to, and you know, by her own admission, she's looking to pull the trigger way too much. So then you cross over to another sport, to basketball, where they count the shots made, but they also count the assists. And I told Madison that it's all about the assist for you. Don't go for the blazing winner, the spectacular winner, because they're so hard to replicate. What you want before you hit a winner is actually the assist shot, which really should get all the credit. And lastly, 70% of points in our sport are errors. So, you know, chasing the 30% slice of the pie is not where your head needs to be. It's about minimizing the bigger part of the pie, which is the 70%, and making less errors, and only kind of knocking off those winners when, you know, you've done the work earlier in the point.
So, Craig, I'm really interested in the Berrettini-Nadal semi. You've got a guy towards the end of his career coming up against a guy who's really building into his, but they also play completely different matches and styles. Rafa, heavy topspin. Berrettini just likes to flatten it out and hit cannons. Who's that going to suit more? And does Berrettini have to change the way he does that playing against someone like Rafa?
I've worked with the Italian Federation now for about 6 years. And during that time, I was Novak's coach, and Matteo was coming on. He was about 100 in the world. The Italian Federation asked me to kind of look at his analytics. And, you know, even at that stage, he was, you know, probably on everything on the serving side of the equation, he was already had the analytics of a top 10 player.
Yep.
On the returning side, he wasn't even in the bottom 10%. He was like in the bottom 2%. So at least we knew where to work on his game. And he's improved. He's got better. I was in the coach's box when he lost in the semifinals in 2019 to Rafa at the US Open. And that was a match that was almost a bridge too far for Matteo. He wasn't quite ready for that one, but I really feel he is now. Matteo is, you know, a serve and a forehand machine. He's looking for forehands as the runaround. Excuse me. He's looking to dictate from the back of the court with the forehand and just kind of playing neutral off the backhand side. So what Rafa's going to have to do is try and lock him into the backhand cage, which is not easy. The way out of the backhand cage is not to go cross-court again and receive the ball back cross-court. It's actually to play through the middle of the court. Middle of the court is an amazing place to hit a tennis ball because you're not giving angle back to your opponent. So, you know, Rafa is going to have to play. I think he's going to have to lift his level. I've been watching here at this event. Obviously, I'm, you know, looking at everything that he's doing today. I've gone through and looked at every point that he's lost. And you know, I'd be very interested to look at AFL football because when, you know, I don't know this, but if the AFL teams are scouting opponents, what I like to do is scout all the points the upcoming opponent lost rather than all the points they won, because that's what you're really trying to replicate. And I've done that for the last few days, and I think Matteo has a red-hot chance to win the semifinal.
Going back to Madison, I mean, in your discussions with her, did it sort of dawn on her when you were simplifying it that why wasn't I giving this information earlier in my career, and how has she accepted that information?
Yeah, great point. So one of the things that came up early in the discussion, I did a 10-match analysis for Madison. I got 10 of her matches, put it all into one aggregated data set, and that was the big key. When you look at it one-on-one, you get good data, but 10 matches gives you a whole different viewpoint. And one of the things Madison said to me that I found so interesting is that throughout her career, she'd been shown highlight reels of her spectacular play, you know, the big winners, the big early forehand winners. And, you know, we made a decision that we're going to show her points that she wins, but there is no winner on her side of the court. So it's about developing the point a bit more. It's about making the opponent uncomfortable. It's about forcing an error. And I think that's really resonated with her. And, you know, she's building back. She had some injuries. She lost confidence, like, you know, every player is going to do throughout their career. But, you know, she goes to Adelaide and wins there and, you know, is in the semis here. So She's in great form. She has great confidence. She's seeing the court very clearly. She's making good decisions. And, it, you know, all of that comes together for an amazing semi-final here in Melbourne Park.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to that this evening. One final one before we let you go, Craig. It's been really interesting stuff. The lasso forehand really interests me because you've enunciated well that Rafa does it.
The lasso. I like it.
Because I think it was named after a coach initially. I can't remember his name, but it was also, it's the same as the lasso. But his feet are in the right position. And yet I see a lot of players take that as an out rather than going extra hard to get their feet in the right position and hit the cross your body forehand, the more high percentage one, the more powerful one. They chicken out and they take the soft option and they go the lasso when in real terms they should be working a bit harder, like Federer, to get over that to that thing because you still can get it.
Jared, you've got a job as a tennis coach. I'm sure if every man and woman, 128 men, 128 women, they listen to your last comment, they'd be after your number to hire you. That's a very astute comment. And let me just, you know, talk about that for a second, is that the reason Rafa does it is his grips lay under, got the full Western grip, and he's looking to produce as much rotation on the ball as possible. It's a combination of spin, it's a combination of depth and power and height, and he's looking to make the opponent uncomfortable. But the other thing is he's hitting the ball high over the net, so he's also incorporating an element of time. The ball's going to take time to get over there, which gives time to come back, and it gives Rafa the ability to run around his backhand and upgrade to a forehand. And other players are doing it because they're late getting prepared, the contact gets back on them, and when the contact gets back, that's where the racket naturally ends up. So you're exactly right. For a lot of players, when you see the lasso, and you'll see it with Ash Barty. I mean, even if Ash wins tonight, there's going to be certainly several forehands where that racket wraps around because Madison is hammering that side. What you need to do is there must be compromise. When a player hits a ball really well to you, you've got to compromise the size of the backswing or you've got to compromise your core position. If it comes hard, you either move back or you shorten. And most players do neither, mainly because they're lazy. And then you've got the error. And you see that lasso forehand as a result.
Mm. Great stuff, Craig. We saw a fantastic game of tennis last night. Scoop said Medvedev would win in straight sets.
He was far off.
Absolutely spot on. Once he was two sets to love down,
he won in straight from that point.
I enjoyed it.
He won three in a row.
You didn't quite explain it quite well enough, but I'm with you 100%.
No.
Felix AA, he's got to be a slam winner. I went to bed after two sets to one. I couldn't believe he lost that game.
But can't believe he went to bed.
I did. But what a win by Medvedev.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Felix will be a slam winner. He'll be a multiple slam winner. He's got a great head on his shoulders. He's very mature. He sees the court. I've done a little bit of work with him as he was emerging. And, I'm just completely impressed. What he did so well was attack the net last night. He came forward.
Yep.
He won 8-for-8 serving and volleying. And, you know, he was winning around 80% of his net points. He was only winning around 40% of his baseline points. So, you know, if you're playing Medvedev, he's staying so back. And when you stay back against him, he's just going to work you side to side. So, you know, he came up 1 point short. That was it. 1 point short last night.
Yep.
And Felix's time is coming. So don't jump off the bandwagon because of that loss last night. He's doing the right things. He's gaining the experience. And, you know, it's just a matter of time. He's coming.
And we expect that Alexei Poprin also is going to make his name at some stage down the track. Out early this time. I know you've had a bit to do with him coaching him, but he still looks like a kid who's got a lot of upside.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I've worked with Alexei as part of the team twice. It was third round of the Aussie Open in 2020, third round of the US Open in 2019. He lost a tough five-setter here early on. And, you know, a little bit of what we talked about before, when he was getting rushed to the forehand side, there was too much of that lasso. So, you know, it's about when you're on defense, understand you're on defense, respect the ball that's coming to you, block it a little bit better. You know, for a lot of players out here, they have the offensive skills that they're using when they have time. But when they don't have time, can you block your way out of trouble? Can you defend? Can you keep contact clean out in front of you? And, you know, Alexi's young and he's going to get better at that. He's got a massive serve, a big forehand. And as we continue to work on the defensive skills, he'll continue to improve.
Craig, great stuff. Enjoyed it immensely. Look forward to coming, having you on again at some stage. But enjoy the rest of the tournament.
Jared, thank you so much.
Craig O'Shaughnessy there, the strategy coach himself, and what an amazing insight he was able to give.
It was good, wasn't it?
A lot of the questions that we ask of players and that players ask of themselves, really. I mean, the stats on, you know, Barty, Keys, backhand, winners versus errors.
That's good.
That's the sort of analysis that we get here on Sports Day. Speaking of great analysis, Peter Johnson, our resident tennis expert, is going to join us next.
Welcome back to Sports Day. And for those of you waiting on the line for Peter Johnson to give us his thoughts on what's happened over the last 24 hours, don't be disappointed. He's about to join us. In fact, he joins us now. Welcome to you, Jono. What an amazing game it was last night. That's the first time I've seen Felix AA play, and I could not believe what my eyes were seeing. That was the best two sets of tennis I've seen anyone play this year.
It was incredible, Jared. I couldn't agree more. And it shows just what a complete package he is. And honestly, he had Medvedev just perplexed. And Medvedev was, you know, almost sort of he was just trying to find a way to stay in there. And it didn't look like Felix would leave any opportunity open to him. And just somehow Medvedev hung on. But gee, when you look at Felix and what future he must have, he's going to be incredible in the next few years.
As I said earlier in the show, it reminded me of the way Federer plays at his best. I mean, his movement was incredible. He takes all these little corrective steps. He goes forward. He's got power. He's got speed. And he exposed Medvedev a number of times, moving him from side to side. Medvedev not getting himself quite as balanced, hasn't got that same agility. Very good speed, but hasn't got that capacity to get himself into the microscopically correct position.
Yeah, and as you say with Felix, the way he moves, he's very much like quick as a cat. And also he played his ground strokes sort of within himself, very measured, but just really moved Medvedev side to side and just didn't miss at all and was able to approach so well. I reckon what happened in the third set, he lost a bit of belief in his slice serve out wide to Medvedev's forehand. Mm. And Medvedev started to get onto it a little bit. And, you know, Medvedev standing so far behind the baseline, Felix had been getting him with that early. But, gee, we're picking little, finding little faults. So, I mean, he was incredible. And the match, just hats off to Medvedev.
Unbelievable for Medvedev.
Wasn't it? And just first time actually in the tournament that someone's come back from two sets to love down. And gee, I thought he might have been a little weary. He looked a little weary even at the end of the first set.
He did, yeah.
And, you know, to hang in like he did just shows what self-belief he has. And when he was down match point in the fourth, just gets up there. And that serve he hits out to the backhand on the backhand side. It's a pretty hard serve to hit. And he just got up there and he just popped it. You know, so he's an absolute champion, Medvedev.
Yeah, that was a gutsy win. I couldn't believe he got across the line, but very exciting times. And it just goes to show, and we talk about Kyrgios a lot on this program, and rightly so. He's had a big win today. We'll get to that. But there's always another one coming through in this sport. I mean, it's a global sport. There's always another. And, I mean, there's two that probably have emerged at the Australian Open after a couple of showings in various tournaments over the last 2 years. But the boy from Spain, the boy from Italy, and the boy from Canada, they have really made a name for themselves.
They have. Sinner, like we talked about the other night, impressive he was. Yeah, but then also Shapovalov, the other Canadian, and I think he and Felix will just push each other along. You know, he wasn't far away against Rafa. These guys, they're coming fast. They're exciting players. Their athleticism's amazing. It's just, the one thing is probably left is just stringing the five sets week in, week out, but that's coming fast. And, as you say, there's a lot making a run now. It's not one or two. It's, a good cluster that are coming.
Jono, can I ask you about the roof? It's frustrated me, the roof policy, for the best part of 20 years, ever since the joint was built. I thought we had it right last night because they had it minusculely opened and were kidding themselves it was still an open court game, but then they went and widened it up, and we get these ridiculous delays. Now, surely we can do better than what we've got.
Well, I think the key to it, Jared, is briefing the players all the time. I think you can, if you can, you can do things definitively if you're giving the players the heads up, because obviously the conditions change a lot if, you know, if it's minusculely open versus, you know, more. And I think you've got to just, and I'm not sure how much they were, perhaps they were telling the players, but, you know, the conditions were almost indoors at one stage versus, and it was a bit of a wind around. It was changing so dramatically. So I think every time you're going to make a change or your strategy with the roof over the next hour or whatever, both players have got to know that, because otherwise it's sort of, they're second guessing a little bit.
Well, and, I reckon stop the second guess. If there's a threat of rain, let's not talk about if there's rain. If there is a threat of rain, close the bloody roof so we don't sit there for 15 minutes doing the dishes.
But then you're changing the rules, Jared.
Well, change the rules. What's wrong with that?
No, but I thought about this long and hard. My opinion's changed on this in the space of 24 hours, I reckon.
Why?
Because as Medvedev,
if it's pissing down with rain, it's just shut the door.
As Medvedev said, he admitted after he won. He's like, changing the roof, change everything and help me. Closing the roof, change. Yeah. Like Roger, 6-7 years ago, said, I'll put it on the, I don't like the roof being closed. It changes it. It means the bigger hitters hit it bigger. And that's not what I am. It's an outdoor sport. If it starts raining,
no, it's not. See, this is where you're wrong, Scoop. It's not an outdoor sport anymore. It's an indoor-outdoor sport. If it's raining, it's indoor. If it's not raining, it's outdoor.
I take issue with that because there's many courts that don't have a roof.
You can take issue all you like, but at the Slams, Jono, Wimbledon have now got an indoor court. I think they've got one at over in the US.
Don't have one at the Fringe.
Have they got one at the Fringe?
Well, they've got a roof now at the French, yeah.
It's an indoor-outdoor sport tennis at Slams because the TV right...
Yeah, that's fine, but just make it indoor when the rain starts.
No, yeah, but then you're delayed. I mean, you've got to make it the threat of rain. I don't think
I'm with you. I don't like the delay.
I don't think it's that difficult.
No, but I think that, as I said, it's about the briefing of the players, because you can do it definitively, Jared and Scoop, if you brief them early. Like, you can just show them the radar before it's coming on. Yep. Before you're going on, you go, look, in the next hour and a half, there's a heck of a lot of rain coming over, so we're going to play with the roof closed.
I'm happy with that.
And if there's...
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I think that's what I think you just got to do. It's about the briefing. It's about... Because remember a couple of years ago, it was actually Roger who seemed like the beneficiary against Cilic in the final, because Roger knew they were playing with it closed. Cilic didn't, or he sort of said he didn't to a degree. And there was this sort of bit of confusion around what was our policy. So you've got to set the rules with the players' buy-in and be definitive about it. And they'll accept it. And that's because that's the rule. No one wants the 15 minutes or 20 minutes of mopping up with the towels when you've got the ability to close the roof. So, you know, it's a bit the same with the heat. I haven't seen the roof closed for the heat for quite a number of years, but it's the same sort of, know the landscape before you're going on. Players are briefed. Then you can be really definitive with your decision.
Scoop said it helped Medvedev. I would argue...
Medvedev have said it helped Medvedev.
That's true. But we haven't heard from FAA.
I love FAA.
And FAA, I reckon, wins that tournament if they didn't have the stuff around mopping it up.
Well, I don't know. I think that's a stretch. Myself,
you think that's a stretch? He was flying when that happened.
I reckon he wins if the rain doesn't come.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
You're saying something slightly different.
No, I'm saying exactly the same. I mean, because the roof is not closed, the rain comes onto the ground and it makes him sit down for 15 minutes.
Yeah, but if the roof was closed before he started the match, he wouldn't have been two sets to love up.
Is that what you... Yeah. Did you factor that into your tip?
I factored it.
Okay. Well, Jono, tell me how much wind gets in when the roof is, say, 80% closed?
Well, I'm not definitive on the actual number, but obviously there's a lot less than when it's 30% closed.
But this is my point. I mean, essentially, if you get it 80% closed, you're kidding yourself if you think it's an outdoor event. It's a closed roof event. No wind's getting in, surely, if it's 80% closed.
Well, but what I'm saying, you're entitled, players are prepared to play with closed roof or open roof.
Yeah.
So the debate of whether it's an indoor or outdoor event is probably negated there. But I think, look, your decisions are made, your roof closure decisions are made on two things, either the heat rule or the rain. And in both cases, you can be definitive on what you're going to do about it before the players go on.
There was one other thing that I needed to discuss with you, Jono, but I got so excited about the roof policy.
You've forgotten?
I think I've forgotten it. Who's going to win the men's now? Still Medvedev?
Yeah, look, it was a brutal match on his body last night, but I still think he matches up well against Tsitsipas. And I think he matches up again. I like Rafa to get to the final, but I'm still staying with Medvedev, although, boy, he's had a hard campaign.
We're on the gondola, aren't we?
We are on the gondola.
We're on the Berrettini bandwagon, I think. Jono, great.
Really? Both of you?
Yeah, we're both on. We've both backed the truck up. Great to have you on.
It's a good horse.
Peter Johnson there, who's on a good horse himself in Ash Barty. So he declared pre-tournament he was backing the truck up. I think Berrettini can get Rafa.
I do too. And I think he can win the whole lot.
I am of that belief.
Because I think Medvedev is showing signs of fatigue.
How good was FAA, by the way?
FAA he was a sight to behold.
Freakish. Like, we were talking about how much of a freak Sinner is. He's every bit the player and more.
More at this stage.
Yeah. He's got weapons.
Oh, and footwork, speed, agility, leap, everything. He's the best thing that I've seen come into tennis for a long time.
Not sure he's going to struggle in the nightclub scene either.
I think he'll go all right, probably because he's a good dancer.
That's exactly what I was getting at. More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. You can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson home. Ash Brown is the chief writer, the editor, the boss of the AFL Record, Jared, and we are getting ever so closer to the AFL men's season starting.
Indeed we are, and looking forward to his first offerings.
Yep.
But most of all, he keeps an eye cast upon the media. But the decision of Channel 9 to vacate a quarterfinal, now this is worthy of discussion.
We're back here again.
Vacate a quarterfinal to put on a doubles game. Quite revolutionary. Now, question is, was it the right call, Ash, as we welcome you, or the wrong call? Because most of our callers thought it was the wrong call.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good to be with you again. I would say it is the right call because you have we're living in an era of clickbait and an era of page impressions and eyeballs. And if you're a sponsor of the Channel 9 tennis broadcast and they pay a lot of money, some very well-known company to be involved, you want the eyeballs. So if they're watching doubles, you're not a purist in these matters. So I think by Channel 9 did the right thing by their viewers and by their sponsors, I think, in putting on the match that everybody so clearly wanted to watch, with apologies to Rafa.
When you say everybody, there was a lot of people who believed what Nine said. They promoted it, and they promoted the hell out of Rafa being on all day and then essentially let them down. And they weren't happy, those people. I'm with you. I thought it was the right call, but there is a large segment of the community thought it was the wrong call.
It is, but at the end of the day, the commercial imperatives are going to rule, aren't they? And I'm not sure whether the Rafa match was on the Gem, because I know they're running. They've been running two matches.
Oh, no.
I mean, two broadcasts.
Ash. That is the nub of the whole situation. Gem was taken off on Monday. They abandoned Gem, and
they were playing a very important afternoon
1957
movie.
Version of a naval movie. Not a bad movie.
One of your favourite movies, actually.
It was Baby in the Navy or something along those lines. But that was the easy fix. And while Scoop is running from this story,
not an easy fix.
Well, it was the easy fix.
Yeah, just call up a control room worth of people and a couple of hosts.
Keep it rolling. You anticipate these things, Scoop. You can't say in the first week we're having Jim because of all the old people. And then in the second week, tell them to get on to nine now.
Of course you can.
That's why people thought Scoop was getting ahead of himself last week. Ash, it was Clip Scoop week last week, or this week.
I think it's still this week, isn't it?
No, it's not this week. Anyway, so you thought it was the right call?
I think it's the right call, but a difficult call, but the right call. But surely you dub the movie and you tell your viewers, okay, if you want to Rafa, go over to 9 Gem now.
Yeah, I don't know what was difficult about. They just put the world feed on. You don't need a host, despite the fact Scoop, I thought, did a magnificent job in the first week. And it's only a matter of time before he elevates from captain of the twos to bit part player of the ones.
You're being nasty. Should we talk some footy?
Why not?
Ash, is Jack Darling going to play footy again, do you think?
Interesting call, isn't it? Because on one hand, West Coast seemed to be saying that he wasn't vaccinated, therefore, under the AFL's new rules, he could no longer be part of the footy club. Then Darling himself put out a carefully worded statement, didn't he, on his through his Instagram or whatever it was.
It was a carefully worded statement that was wrong.
Well, yeah, if That's right. I don't think he's going to play at this stage unless there's a new unless this new Novavax scene or whatever it's called comes along and that might be the one he's looking for.
The Novavax. Do you think, Jared, just as Novavax. As a side note, Novavax at any stage in the last 2 or 3 months thought about changing the name of the vaccine? Novavax?
Well, possibly just for marketing.
The Novavax Axe? The Novavax Axe?
The one thing that, to me, was very unlike the West Coast Eagles was that they just didn't appear on the same page.
In fact, that's right. They're usually club in control, aren't they?
Yeah, it just looked... petulant's probably not the right word, but there is a word...
Disorganised, at the least.
Well, it just looked like there's a bit of disharmony there.
You know,
the club's put out this statement, and then he's gone, no, boys. This is really the... I mean, that to me would be the more worrying thing. I think eventually people who don't want to take these vaccines will be able to play with other vaccines. Now, they're going to leave him on the list for at least 12 months to see if that happens. So his career's not dead, but... Geez, it's an upsetting way to start a season.
It is, and then Shuey gets injured as well with a mysterious leg injury that we haven't had any clarity on today. No. You're right about West Coast, Jerry. They usually their communication, in fact, just about everything West Coast has done for the last 30 years, except for a couple of instances, but it's been pretty good. And the mixed messaging coming out of West Coast the last couple of days has surprised me. And I was talking to a West Coast person today. He seems to think they'll be all right, but from over here, I'm not so sure.
Well, they've still got a very good list. There's no question about that. It's a question of whether they can get fit and stay fit. And if Shuey's not there and yippee-yo-yo. I mean, he's gone from one of the best four players through the middle of the ground in the competition to really having not that much impact for 18 months because of his osteitis pubitis.
Yeah, he's going to need a really big season, isn't he? Particularly if there's issues with Shuey, they're going to need a massive season out of Yo to beat competitive. You think of all those games in Perth, if they do get to play their fixture schedule, that's the other thing with West Coast. There's this uncertainty over where they, will they start the season in Perth? Will they play 12 games off the stadium? It's a bit of an unknown at the moment.
That's the most interesting thing for me, Jared, and just speaking to a few people around the traps.
Whether the Emperor will open up their doors.
So I wouldn't be surprised if the AFL haven't already reached out to the McGowan government
and
said, look, we respect your decision to do whatever you want with your borders, but if it's going to stay like this, you organise them into new states.
Yep.
Because, we're not dealing with it. They're going to have to live somewhere else.
Mm.
And, while half the competition across the last few years have lived interstate for times, it's not as easy as it sounds to just relocate two footy clubs.
No, not for a long period of time.
Well, it becomes indefinitely, doesn't it? Because it's like, when are the borders going to reopen? We're not sure. Yeah. Okay, well.
So the families have to come too.
So it becomes hundreds of people and tens of millions of dollars later. That's going to be a really interesting watch, I reckon, the next month or so.
Best read today, though, Ashley, was that the Emperor has been told by the federal court that he has to appear in Sydney
at
the court.
That's right.
At his hearing.
So he applied for special compensation and they said, sorry.
Yeah, he went for the special dispensation, a bit like Novak. And they weren't all that happy with it, the federal court judges. So he's going to have to come here. And as soon as he walks out of the state, he's going back for 2 weeks quarantine, which will, I'm sure, please everybody in the country.
If it's good for the goose, it's good for Gann, isn't that what they say?
Yeah, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the goose.
He'll quarantine at home, though.
Oh, he couldn't do that. He could not do that politically.
Definitely.
Couldn't.
Definitely.
Couldn't do it politically.
I'll have $100 on
$100 it is.
Okay. Ash, anything else before you let us go that sort of triggered your fancy, tickled your fancy last few days?
We talk about the AFLW, the major disruption around AFLW, with an extension of what we've been talking about in the West Coast, the West Australian teams being relocated and games being, postponed and cancelled in 24 hours notice, and hopefully this is not an indicator of what's happened with the men's competition, but I do feel for the AFL and in particular the clubs at the moment. They are going through very difficult times. There's such uncertainty around that fixture. It's going to be a bit like the Premier League, that there'll be no ladder that means anything up until such time as every team's played all its games, and that's, I think, how AFLW is looking through the end of the season. And they're going to have to play, and then some play midweek games, aren't they, because they've already missed some weekends. So they're really under the cosh at the moment trying to get that season going.
Are you a believer in the Kyrios Kokkinakis, whatever we call it, festival of tennis?
I think so. It's got people talking about the Open. It's getting a new crowd interested in tennis. It throws up. I did read one piece this week saying that Kyrgios should ditch the singles and just take the show on the road and just be the doubles, be a specialist doubles play.
Well, he sort of already has
crowds, not just well, that's right. His singles ranking slipping badly. Just play doubles with Kokkinakis or whoever. I mean, the Grand Slam tournaments would love it.
I love Nick Kyrgios and I love Thanasi Kokkinakis, but I think this whole rhetoric that they're somehow saving tennis has gone way too far. Ash, great to have you on. We'll chat next week.
Look forward to it. Thanks, boys.
Ash Brown, senior writer and the boss of the AFL Record. More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. Before we go on what has been a huge night here on Sports Day, a quick Nufarm weather update. Their products are formulated with the highest quality right here in Australia. Jared, 32. Possible shower with heavy falls dropping to 25 with more showers expected.
Given that you've done the research, what time is the change coming through, Scoop, to drop it from 35 or 32 down to 25?
I don't know, Jared, but...
Around midday?
All I know is that the wedding that I'm attending tomorrow, given that it is at Albert Park, not Albert Park, it's Albert Park Lake at Carousel.
Yeah.
I think the bride is a little...
Bit nervous?
Anxious.
Oh, what a shame.
Isn't rain on your wedding day supposed to be good luck? Is that an old wives' tale or literally?
Oh, well, I'd say that's an old wives' tale.
Okay, well, sorry, Alex and Corinne. No, it'll be a great day. That was the Nufarm weather update, Australian through and through. So we're on the gondola, both of us?
Indeed we are. I won't go straight sets.
Like
but,
me? You don't need to.
I reckon it's another...
He beats Rafa in five?
I think he beats Rafa in four.
Oh, boy.
So it's not a five-setter, it's a four-setter.
Take care, everyone.